welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn. This is episode number 210 of the podcast, and it's 24th of February 2015 as I record this. So today I have an interview with Debbie Young, who has co-authored a book about how to get your books into bookstores, libraries, literary festivals, and much more for the Alliance of Independent Authors. Now, we go into all kinds of details and hopefully it will give you an insight beyond my own digital focused world. And I know I am very focused on digital, and that's my choice. And I made the choice to only use print on demand, and I don't chase bookstores or any of these kind of print distribution options. But I know many of you care about it. And many people dream of having their book in a bookstore. So hopefully this will be a really useful interview and will give you at least a behind the scenes look at how a bookstore works. It's a really interesting chat. On other things, last week I posted an article about the roller coaster of being a writer, which as of right now has 107 comments and counting and a lot of shares. And basically, I've been going through what we all go through, and so I wrote it down. And occasionally I do these kind of overshare-y posts and they seem to resonate, and it's basically a backwards and forwards across the page of all the things, all the really difficult things we go through. And so I'll just read a couple of them. I say, so I start with, I hate writing. It's so hard to force myself to sit and type words that are a load of crap anyway. I love writing. Some days I can get into a flow state and the words come effortlessly onto the page and they're actually pretty good. I love creating something from just my brain. It's the best life in the world. And then I kind of go backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards on the emotional roller coaster of being an author. And So I've said I pretty much go through this every day. How about you? And it's so interesting how many people feel the same way. So I would urge you to just go and have a look at that post. It was 17th of February 2015, called The Roller Coaster of Being a Writer. Do you ever feel this way? And hopefully that will make you feel better if you are in one of those moments where you're just like, what is going on? You know, I have no ideas. I can't write. I'm terrible. I hate being criticized. I'm afraid. We all feel this way. So I hope that helps you a little bit. I mean, this is one of the reasons I blog, because I write these things and I'm scared of writing them. And then people resonate and say I'm reading their mind. And basically, we all feel the same way. So being honest sometimes can help you too. So other updates. This morning I was back in the recording studio with Business for Authors. I think probably it will be out sometime in March as an Audible audiobook. So quite excited about that. It's a really, you know, professional studio and everything. So that will be a good recording. And again, it's quite good to read my own work aloud, and it's kind of helping me revisit some of those business principles that I wrote and promptly forgot myself. It's like we have to remind ourselves of this all the time. What is it? I think it was Jim Rohn who said something about, inspiration or something is like washing. You know, you have to do it every day. We have to almost talk ourselves back into the right state every single day, which is tough. But that's the war of art, as Stephen Pressfield would say. Other updates, I spent last weekend in Lerwick in the Shetland Islands, which is sort of between the north of Scotland and Norway, and I did a full day seminar on making a living with your writing. And it was chilly and windy and it hailed on me and I had a walk in the freezing wind, but sort of some stunning breaks between the clouds, and lovely to see someone new and also to find people who, you know, all over the place who were interested in doing this. So that was a great trip. And my next travel for speaking is the end of March. I'll be in Charleston, South Carolina for PubSense Summit. So hopefully that'll be warmer than the Shetlands in February. It was a hell of a trip home. That's all I can say. Okay, and on fiction, I've just got the final edits back from my proofreader, so I will be completing the changes on One Day in New York and loading that up as the final file on the pre-orders and getting the print book organized. And One Day in New York is on pre-order now on Amazon, Kobo and iBooks, and coming to all stores 13th of March. And something else funny and embarrassing that I'll admit to, I have a group of readers, sort of first readers I send ARCs to, and my pen friends, as they are known, and I ended up sending the wrong file. I sent them a file with editor's comments, and I spent some time being mortified, and then got some emails from people saying it's really interesting to see behind the scenes of an author's kind of editing process. So I'm trying to let that one go as just a little mistake. But again, we all just make these mistakes and we're all human. Yeah. Anyway, I'm very excited about the book. It is... I think I'll just read you the blurb. It is my podcast, after all, and I shall read in a suitable thriller voice. New York is built upon a dark secret. If this knowledge falls into the wrong hands, the city will crumble. When a woman is crucified on a burning cross in downtown Manhattan, it marks the beginning of a dangerous crusade. The confessors seek the powerful relic of a dark angel, and they will stop at nothing to get it. Arcane agent Jake Timber is in New York to investigate the 11th century cloister's cross alongside Naomi Locasto, a linguist, when they become entangled in the mystery. As his past threatens to overwhelm him, can Jake find the relic of the angel before the confessors destroy the city? Okay, so there you go. There is One Day in New York, and it is a novella, as all my One Day series are. So this podcast episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and today I'm actually going to do the advert for Kobo because I'm really enthusiastic about something that is happening to my books at the moment. So what I've discovered over time on Kobo is that readers will tend to buy higher priced product at Kobo, which I think is a combination of two things. So Kobo makes income from merchandising, so they're more likely to promote higher priced books, and customers are therefore used to higher priced books. And also you get a higher royalty rate for books over $9.99, unlike on Amazon. So readers are more used to buying higher priced books on Kobo. So I've had a box set of my first three Arcane novels there for a couple of months, and it's now one of my highest income earners. So not necessarily highest sellers in terms of volume, but I make it's second in terms of overall money of all time. It's the second one on that list. So considering I only released it late last year, it's doing really, really well. So and I price that at $8.99, and it's also available elsewhere, but it sells best on Kobo. So that's interesting. And I've also just released a second box set of the Arcane novels on Kobo, and which is everywhere else, but also a box set for authors with How to Market a Book, Business for Authors, and my public speaking book, which I won't be releasing on Amazon, and it's priced at $12.99, which would mean I'd only get 35% royalty on Amazon, whereas I get the top rate, 70, at Kobo. So the main thing there is if you publish direct on Kobo Writing Life, you can publish higher price books and products like box sets, and you can still get the top rate royalty, and the customers, I think, from my own anecdotal evidence, are more likely to buy higher priced product. So all you need is to get a new cover and package up the three books into one file, and I just do that formatting on Scrivener, and you've got a new product, a higher price. And also if you publish direct to Kobo Writing Life, you'll have a chance to participate in various promotions, which is very cool. And also, I still use the Global Map Report on the dashboard every month to see if I've sold in a new country. That is one of the features of the dashboard I love the most. It's this lovely overview and it always makes me excited. So it is free to publish on Kobo Writing Life, and you only need a simple EPUB file, and you can go to kobo.com/writinglife. And also wanted to mention, on the Kobo Writing Life podcast this week is an interview with Christine Catherine Rush, who is one of my top mentors as an author entrepreneur. And she talks, she's interviewed by Mark Lefebvre, and they talk about reader cookies, amongst other things, which is very cool. So go to kobowritinglife.com and check out the podcast. And there are interviews with lots of people on there, including Hugh Howey and myself and other people. Okay, so this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to the people supporting on Patreon and to new sponsor Linda DeLuca. So on Patreon, you can support me with a few dollars or even just $1 per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month, so less than a coffee a month. And you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Or of course, you can buy my books. Thank you so much, and let's get on with the interview. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Debbie Young. Hi Debbie.
Hello.
Great to have you on the show. So just a little introduction. Debbie writes short stories and flash fiction, as well as non-fiction, on various topics. She's also the commissioning editor for selfpublishingadvice.org, the blog for the Alliance of Independent Authors. And she's also the co-author of Opening Up to Indie Authors, a guide for bookstores, libraries, reviews, literary event organisers and self-publishing authors. It's a hell of a title, but we're talking about it today. So Debbie, just start by telling us a bit more about you and your writing journey and how you became an indie.
Well, it took me a very long time really to get round to it, because I'd always wanted to write books from when I was little, when I was very little, and it was just something I always enjoyed, writing stories. And when I went to university to do an English degree, because that seemed the obvious next step to do, wasn't quite sure where to go after that, but thought about journalism, and my first proper job really was in journalism, and sort of fell into a career of different kinds of jobs that all involved writing in some form or other, for marketing, promotion, communication, sort of spreading information, for first of all as a journalist, then as a PR consultant, and then latterly in a children's reading charity. So everything always seemed to lead back to the written word for me. And it was really only when I was working for the children's reading charity that, purely by chance, I met the wife of somebody who I used to work with years ago when I was in PR consultancy, and she'd set up a self-publishing services company. And that was Helen Hart of Silverwood Books, who offers all kinds of services to help authors who don't want to go the total DIY route to publish beautiful professional standard books. Got chatting to her about it. By that time, I'd started blogging. I really enjoyed blogging because it's a way of writing what I wanted to write rather than writing, you know, commercial newsletters or magazine articles or whatever. Really enjoyed that. And got chatting to her about it. And she was telling me about the problems that her authors faced when they produced this beautiful book, that how challenging it was for the authors to go. And this was a few years ago. How challenging it was to find readers for their books, and how she wanted to give as much help and encouragement to her authors as possible to promote their books. And the upshot of it was that I said, well, what you really want is, you know, you're a publisher, you need to publish a book about book promotion. And she said, well, would you like to write it? So walked into that one. So then I wrote a book called Sell Your Books, which was drawing on my sort of PR and communication experience, really, to help her authors, particularly, to market their self-published books. Researching that, I've learned so much about the way that self-publishing was going. I mean, I had encounters with people who had gone through the old-fashioned vanity publishing route in the past, and dismissed that. Never quite had the patience or the time, really, to pursue writing the books that I'd always wanted to write, and to go the traditional route. But when I heard about the self-publishing route, I thought, my goodness, how lucky are we to be born at this time and we have this at our disposal. You know, it's such a godsend, really, such a wonderful thing to be able to be involved with. Found out that about the Alliance of Independent Authors that Orna Ross was just founding, as you well know, and started to become involved with them. Not long afterwards, I was invited by Orna to get involved with running the advice blog. I'd written some guest posts on various topics there and really was enjoying being part of the community and enjoying the buzz and the companionship that came out of that, and finding it was such a great way to learn all about it. And as well as having latched onto your website and your and all that you were doing, you could see that you know, the people like yourself really leading everybody along in the whole sector. And I just really wanted to be part of it. And really, it's started to take over my whole life now.
Yes, it does. It tends to do that. But
it's addictive. Yes.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, so you've definitely jumped in, and it is a really fun community. And why I wanted to talk to you about this book is it's a brilliant resource for authors. And I would say the second half is aimed at authors. The first half is really aimed at that sort of getting events and bookstores and things to open up to indie authors. But the second half is all about how authors can get into bookstores and libraries and stuff. So first up, why did you and Dan Holloway write the book, and why do you think the opening up to indie authors sort of idea is so important?
Well, it was becoming very apparent from the various conversations online, partly on the Ally Forum and in responses to other blogs and all the various activity online, that there are an awful lot of people who didn't have who had a lot of misconceptions about the way that self-publishing works, about the standards that are applied, the way it operates. And people on both sides of the fence, authors had a lot of misperceptions about how the trade viewed them. And the trade had and still does have a lot of misunderstandings about how self-publishing works and the standards, the quality standards particularly, that the best self-published authors are able to achieve. And I think particularly because I had a background in communications and in public relations and building relationships between different parties, it was very clear that somebody really needed to get in there and bring the two together, sort of almost like being the diplomat, you know, bringing together not quite warring factions, but making people understand each other better. And once they understood each other better, then they would be able to work together more effectively. And the Orna had wanted to produce a book like this for some time. And I think I happened to be in the right time at the right place with the right background to be able to do that. And all of these things need to be phrased very diplomatically as well, so as to avoid offending or upsetting or making the situation worse rather than better. You know, that I'm a quite a good diplomat. That was the other thing that I would have wanted to do when I was younger, was to go into the diplomatic service.
And you know, it's really funny you say that, because I was, you know, last year, the year before, I was speaking at a lot of publishing conferences, and I also really wanted to be a kind of diplomatic go-between. Mm-hmm. And then something happened and I just went, I put my hands up and I give up, because I found that you, however much we talk about, like you mentioned, quality standards, we mention, you know, independent authors as opposed to self-publishing, which to me, you know, independent author kind of implies the professionalism, and and I just got to the end of my tether of defending us, you know, in a way, and just kind of wanted to just get on with what we do. And it's almost, you know, when people are religious, and the best way of showing your faith is by your behavior, not by preaching about it. I got to that point. And then your book, which I think is perfect and diplomatic and wonderful and should be more widely read by people in the industry. But anyway, I think what I'm saying is thank you for writing it.
Somebody had to do it.
And I also think it's very useful for authors who want to stay, you know, continue approaching these kind of groups to, you know, it helps understand their language. So I do kind of want to ask about that, because you did mention there, you said the quality standards that the best self-publishers can achieve, and you have a number of exhortations in the book. You know, what standards are you asking indies to have when they approach libraries, bookstores, etc.?
Well, the most important thing is they have a book that looks like a professional book, that reads like a trade published book in the best possible way. So that I always say that if you have a identity parade of books that are taken off the shelf of a library or in a bookshop, you don't want to be able to spot the self-published one. And if yours is obviously self-published, you know, homemade Blue Peter job type approach, then you're doing something wrong. So first and foremost, you've got to have a product that will fit in that professional environment, because bookshops, libraries, festivals, all of these players, they have the highest standards. They're trying to serve their audiences with the best possible goods. So you've got to do all that you can to make your book the best it can possibly be. You've also got to leave behind you any sense of entitlement. Mm. You've got to be prepared to take your place in the marketplace, effectively making a bid for the space on the shelf or in the festival programme or in the library shelf, alongside the rest of the players. You may feel fantastic that you've written a book, and quite rightly so, because there are so many people out there who always say, oh, I've got a book in them, but never actually do it. And yes, it is a wonderful thing to have been able to write your book and to get it out there, but you have no entitlement to expect people to read it, to buy it, to borrow it, to want to talk about it, unless you've given it your all. And when you go into deal with any of these players, with any of the book buyers, festival organisers or whatever, you've got to recognise that they are getting great approaches from people who are as good as, if not better than you, all of the time. And you've got to really have something, you've got to have your case, make your case very well, and be prepared to have to make your case. I hear, speaking to booksellers, to owners of bookshops who are simply there trying to make their living out of selling books, I hear of so many cases where authors have taken their book into the shop in the middle of a busy Saturday, almost expecting the proprietor to snap up copies on the spot to put on their shelves, having no grasp of what they're really asking the bookseller to do, not really understanding how they operate, how much administration they have to do, how difficult it is for them to deal with a one-off supplier, and not understanding that the bookseller has to make money out of their book. There are even authors who go in who are quite surprised to find that the bookseller wants a cut of the price at all. And you thought, well, what planet have these people been living on? Should they be allowed out alone?
Let's talk a bit more about that, because the reality of a bookstore, I think, is something I'm always surprised that most authors don't actually realise what the reality of a bookstore is. So maybe you can just talk about returns, you know, how fast the turnover is, and that discounting element.
Yes, okay. Typical booksellers will expect around 40% discount off your list price, off your recommended retail price. So that's an enormous chunk off your bottom line, really. Why do they expect that? Well, they have their own costs to pay. They have staff costs, they have their rent, their rates, or whatever it's costing them to run their shop. How they are paying for the running of the shop is from the sales of books, and that has to come from somewhere. You know, they're not there as charities. So people don't really think about the economics of how much it would cost, if, you know, to put the boot on the other foot. If an author wanted to try and do sort of the economic sums of how much it would cost them to set up and run a bookshop, they would soon become quite incredulous as to how anyone ever makes profits out of running a bookshop at all, and how do so many bookshops stay open. I mean, I know we're losing a shocking number of independent bookshops all the time. I mean, it's just a shrinking marketplace. Quite honestly, I'm surprised that there are still so many shops trading. And that's another campaign that we're going to be looking at this year. Perhaps come on to that a bit later, is we want to try and encourage authors and try encourage everybody to use bookshops, high street bookshops, so much more, so that we can help them continue to sell books of all kinds, not just self-published books, but just to keep them on our streets and keeping our culture thriving, really. Sorry, I digress completely there. But yes, so they're looking for 40% discount. They are looking for ease of administration. If you're supplying a bookshop with just your book and nobody else's book, for all the books that they sell for you, there's going to be paperwork involved. Now, I'm very, very lucky. I live very close to three independent bookshops. And talking to the proprietor of two of them, Hereward Corbett, Yellow Lighted Bookshop in Tetbury and Nailsworth in Gloucestershire, I went in to see him one day when I was researching for this book. And he said, you caught me at a good moment. You know, it's quiet here. I've just had somebody coming in to pitch to me today from one of the big publishing companies with the 100 books that are most likely to be the bestsellers within that publisher's list for the next 6 months. 10 seconds a book, fully up to speed. I'll get one invoice for all of those. How good is that? And you think, gosh, yes, you know, that is so much simpler than dealing with 100 authors individually, which would just be a diabolical, it would be a nightmare administratively to have to deal with them all individually. So not only have you got to make your case to the bookseller for your book being good and saleable, but you've got to make it worth his while to go the extra mile and do that extra admin around your book to sell your book. And then suppose if you've got your book selling for say £10, which is quite expensive for paperback, and he's only getting £4 per copy, effectively, use those numbers because they're nice and simple to calculate with, then all he's getting for doing all the paperwork surrounding your book and giving you your cheque or your cash or backs payment or whatever, for finding its space on the shelf, keeping it on the shelf, keeping an eye on it, remembering to pay you at the right time, and or taking it out off the shelf when it's been on there long enough and he doesn't think it's sell, to let you know that you need to collect it because it's on sale or return. Well, all of that for £4 is an awful lot of work per book, and that's if he sells any at all. Yeah. Most booksellers will only take a couple of copies. If they take 10 copies from you, you are doing very well indeed. And if they are replicating that sort of activity for every book on the shelf, that's an awful lot of work. They have to operate on the basis of sale or return, because if they don't sell your book, then what are they going to do with it? You know, they can't, they run on such tight margins and on such tight budgets that they can't afford to buy books that they're not sure of selling. And in other business, like with newspaper retailing, magazine retailing, it operates on the same basis. A shop will order in the newspapers and magazines. If they don't sell however many copies of the Times that day, then the Times will take it back the next day and credit them for it. It has to work in the same way for bookshops, or else even more bookshops will be going out of business. The trouble with sale or return is that if books are returned to you unsold, they're not going to be in as pristine condition as when you took them in there, so you may not be able to resell them either. So if you are going to sell into physical bookshops, you have to really be committed to either accepting that you're going to collect them in a slightly, well, not necessarily battered condition, but in a not quite as good condition as you took them in.
And you say collect there, assuming that people are physically collecting books.
Yes.
Otherwise, you actually have to pay the shipping if you use a distributor.
Yes.
So you can already be out of pocket, even for just returns.
Yeah, I mean, even if you happen to live in a flat over a bookshop, you know, it's still...
Your time. This is
Yeah, exactly, yes.
Your time involved. But can we just also stress the fast turnover of books in general. How long does a book normally stay in a bookstore before the next lot of stuff comes in?
Oh, they have books coming in all the time.
So it's like a month, isn't it? A month, 6 weeks.
Yes.
And if you have a traditional publishing deal, your book will be in and out of the bookstore generally, unless it's a 50 Shades of Grey, will be in and out, you know, within a month to 6 weeks.
Yes, because there'll be lots more books coming along to take its place, and lots more that are more current, that's been more talked about, that will be the subject of the next film that's big in the cinema, and there are always more coming to take their place. And you have to... For a lot of self-published authors, the game isn't really worth a candle.
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing. We're talking. I don't have print as a business model myself. Mm-hmm. I use print on demand, but after a massive mistake I made, you know, years ago when I bought 2,000 books and then, you know, ended up putting them all in the landfill, you know, I decided not to go that route. But I know some people do have that dream. So what are the options for people who do want to do the physical bookstore thing?
Well, you can, if you're publishing through Ingram Spark or Lightning Source, you can... you can tick the box when you're putting your book up there to accept sale or return, in which case you are then saying you're taking a punt on it. Basically, you're saying that you are prepared to fund the cost of the shipping and to accept the books returned, and that is a big risk. But at the same time, while you're making your books available through those channels to the booksellers, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to order them, because whereas the big publishers will be having reps going around to all the shops, pitching, they're making a case for those books all the time. The only way really that a bookseller is likely to order in your book through that route is if they've seen something online or in the media, which will prompt them to order in stocks of your book, or if they are local shops that you've built up a relationship with. So if you live close to bookshops and you go into those bookshops a lot, you're a good customer and you build up a good relationship with the staff, then there is the possibility that you will persuade them to take your books, and that's fantastic. If you do, terrific. In which case they can order them in that route. Or if you're going in there as a customer anyway, then why not just plan it so you take your books in, take your stocks in when you're going in to do your usual shop, or going in and looking as if you're doing book shopping, even if you don't go in and buy books all the time, because that's the other risk. You know, if you decide that every time that you're going to deal with local bookshops and do your deliveries by hand and do the little tour in your car every so often, take your books around, it's awfully tempting to go in and spend all your potential profits buying buying
your
books.
£4 profit.
Yes. Yes. Yes, I must admit I'm guilty of that.
Well, I think, and this, you know, I think this is the interesting point. I mean, we must say that the biggest indies like Barbara Freethy, Bella Andre, Hugh Howey do have print deals, and Barbara Freethy's is now with Ingram Spark, who are distributing her books. But she is, you know, the biggest indie author and in romance as well. So, I mean, maybe we're seeing a change in, you know, in people doing this, but certainly it doesn't stop people doing print on demand. As, you know, default, everyone should be doing print on demand as a default position.
Yes. Yeah.
The print run and a bookstore thing that, you know, may be more questionable.
Yeah, I think it's always good to have, but even if you're not going to go into bookstores at all, it's still worth having some printed copies through print on demand or through short print run or however, because I mean, received wisdom is that you sell more books, more ebooks, if you've got the physical book to show people, because it gives you a bit of credibility. People think, oh, so she's a real author, she's got a print copy.
and it's great for marketing.
Yes. And there are lots of other opportunities where a physical book will come in use at fairs and festivals, or just going to author events, you know, to have a few print copies in your bag. Mm. Although there are all sorts of whizzy ways for making it easy for people to order your ebooks, so giving them a QR code on your business card or whatever, or giving them a book that they can buy on a memory stick or whatever. It's still really nice to be able to show the physical book.
No, definitely. So what about libraries? Because I'm actually more interested in libraries, first of all, because you can get into Overdrive through Smashwords. So, you know, you can get ebooks into libraries. And also libraries are moving digital.
Yes.
Yeah, which is interesting. And I know of a startup by some indies who are going direct to libraries, going to be putting, you know, ebooks directly into libraries. So what about indie authors getting into libraries?
I think it's a similar situation in a way to the bookshops, in that you still have to convince them that your book is worth giving their shelf space to, and that they would do better to have your book there than somebody else's book. Although librarians don't have the same responsibilities financially in a way, although they don't feel them as directly as a bookstore proprietor will, because they're not worrying about whether they'll have enough income to pay their mortgage from the book sales. They still have a huge sense of responsibility for keeping the shelf space at its most appealing, to keep luring in the punters, because if they don't have people, members of the public, coming in to use their library, then they won't have a library for very long. So they have their first duty, really, is to their key borrowers, to keep the shelves looking good and to have an alluring stock in there. So different libraries all over the world will have different ways of organising their buying. And the best thing really to do is to make inquiries at the local level to find out what your local libraries are doing. And I think, as with all marketing, really, you know, if you start off local and build up your confidence and awareness locally, then you can roll out what worked. You can find out what about your particular books excites people, excites bookshops and librarians, and then roll it out, you know, fine tune a larger campaign to roll out further afield. I think libraries are also quite misunderstood by a lot of authors, in the same way as bookshops are. People don't realise that, in the same way that different bookshops will have different clientele and different bestsellers and different product ranges, different libraries will do as well. And it's also easy to forget that just because you don't go into specialist libraries, there are lots of specialist libraries that might be relevant to your books, so academic libraries, school libraries, professional libraries, you know, they're not all the same. So it's worth really drilling down and finding, just looking for opportunities that are particularly good for your kinds of books. And I think also authors ought to spend more time in libraries. I'm always astonished at how many authors I speak to who never really set foot in a bookshop and equally never set foot in a library. And then they wonder why they have trouble making themselves understood, you know, and getting on the same wavelength as booksellers and libraries. Well, they've got to go in there just to sort of acclimatise and get to understand, just feel how their little world works. And so much of it is down to really building communication and mutual understanding. Going back to bookshops for a second, I'm always horrified to hear tales from booksellers about people going into bookshops and asking them for information, making all their inquiries, getting recommendations for books. And then when the bookseller says, well, OK, is this the book that you'd like to buy? They say, oh, no, I'll get it on Amazon. It's all right, don't worry. And I think the same happens with libraries. You know, people don't really connect as they ought to need to do to get the best out of the relationship. So I'm hoping that our book will give that little bit of a wake up call to them in both spheres, really.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. And I think, you know, like you say, you have to think about the demographics and who is the market for your book. Mm. So each author has to consider what they want to do with their time. So I know, for example,
yes,
Karen Inglis, who's been on the show, who's a children's book author. People who write children's books in particular, I think, do have to be looking at schools and bookstores and libraries, because that's a great way to reach children and their parents. Whereas if you're writing more regular genre fiction like myself, and your business model is not around that, then you have to make that decision For yourself. So I think, but let's talk about organisations, because I'm really interested. We've just heard that the SFWA, the Science Fiction Writers of America, is now opened up to indie authors. And the organisation I'm in, the ITW, International Thriller Writers, is open, and so is RWA, Romance Writers America. A lot of these are American organisations, you notice, whereas some of our British ones still are not, which I think is classic snobbery. But what do you, I mean, it really is, it's brilliantly British. What do you think about the professional organisations? How can indies, you know, it help these organisations let us in as such?
Again, it's a question of proving themselves to, and their books to be of equal worth to those of their traditional sort of core members, which more and more indie authors are able to do, because the standards are rising all the time. But they, but again, they don't, they have to make sure that they don't have a sense of entitlement, and that they don't develop a victim mentality, which some of them do. It's too easy for somebody to go into a little sort of self-destructive spiral, saying, oh, well, they won't let me in because I'm an indie author and because I'm self-published and they're just being snobbish, without actually really examining their book. And some of them, but if they examine their book, they will realise that actually, you know, they don't stack up. So they've got to make sure that their books are of admissible calibre. It's not, because that's actually why these organisations have been slow to embrace self-published authors. It's because they're trying to maintain the calibre of the books that they're all about. It's not a personal thing. It isn't really discriminatory against the people, it's against the product at the end of the day. Mm. I think that from the organisations that I've been involved with, and I don't have the same degree of involvement that you have, because I haven't written as many genre books as you have. I'm a bit sort of narrow niche with my short stories and flash fiction, you know. But last year I was asked to go and speak to the Romantic Novelists Association in where was it, Shropshire, I think, somewhere. A very nice little sort of place that they were meeting. It's one of the agricultural universities, and it was just lovely. And I was half expecting to have, you know, tomatoes thrown and things going on to talk about self-publishing, because I'd heard that they were not that welcoming of it. But actually, talking to them, I was really taken aback. They did. A lot of the authors that I spoke to, they really got it. They understood what it was all about. A lot of them had, a lot of the trade published authors who had great success in this very high selling genre, had been through the standard process with trade publishers in having their less popular books and their older books being delisted, taken out of print. And they were finding that once they got their rights back, they could self-publish them and do very nicely out of them. And by trying to match them to the standards of their trade-published books, you know, to the reader, they didn't know or care who was publishing them. They were just keen to get hold of books written by their much-loved authors. And these authors were finding that not only were these books going down well, but they're also making more money out of them per copy than of their latest bestseller, which was very interesting. So in a way, those organisations are slightly sort of reforming themselves from within, because the authors as individuals are having that experience. And the authors themselves seem to be very open-minded about it and were quite happy to entertain the idea. But like everybody, you know, they'd also all seen lots of examples of very badly self-published books that they didn't want to, that made them wary of accepting them all together, sort of as a lump. And I guess that's as it should be, really.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think these organisations do have a line, certainly ITW, kind of prove your sales numbers, which is hilarious, because if you are traditionally published, you don't have to prove any sales at all.
Yes.
You just prove that you've got a book published, which is, as we know, a very different thing. But also, it's interesting you say that, because this is the second year I'm judging I picked a panel for Bristol Crime Fest. which, you know, I know you know about. And so a lot of people submitted for the panel. And so I, for 2 years now, I've had a look at all these people who've submitted and been able to see the dramatic increase in quality. In just a year. I mean, the first year it was, you know, I found it quite difficult. But the second year it was a real struggle to pick people because the quality was so high across the board. So I think this quality kind of mission is getting out there as people are realizing. And while you were talking, I was also thinking that what you're basically saying about libraries, bookstores, organizations is putting the author has to put their mind in the mind of the recipient. It's a bit like classic marketing. You have to think like a bookseller. What is easiest for the bookseller? Or think like the organization. So you have to switch your head around and stop thinking
absolutely
about me, the author, and think about them.
Yeah. Yes, yes. The more they can do that, the easier they will find it, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it, and I was also laughing because I've accepted to speak at the Stratford Literary Festival, which, as you know, the home of Shakespeare. I'm fully expecting this to be the final bastion of tomato throwing at indie. So I'm that'll be interesting. That's later this year, and I think if Stratford Literary Festival has opened up to indies, we've possibly won the open up campaign.
Yes. Splendid.
Which is cool.
Doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. So I also wanted to ask you about the Alliance and, you know, what are some of the benefits that you get from the organisation and that you see coming, you know, and you know, particularly around this book. I know there's some things we're doing with this book as well as other things.
The Alliance is lots and lots of benefits. I would say the biggest single one that everybody would find in there who joined it is the companionship and the moral support and the feeling that they're not alone in their quest. And it's a very warm, supportive environment. I mean, not all of our members are on the Facebook forum, but the Facebook forum, which has about 700 people engaged with it now, all over the world. I think that just being part of that forum alone justifies the membership, because whatever question or problem that you have with your book, or even if you're just feeling a little bit discouraged, you can go on that forum any time of day or night. And there will be some indie author somewhere in the world who is on there. and you can put your question or share a view and do surveys, poll people about whether they like your book cover or your blurb or whatever. And you will always get passionate but honest and kind responses. You know, there are different degrees of frankness with which people will
speak. Some tough love too.
Yes. but it's, everybody has the same basic ideals, really. Everybody wants each other to succeed and for the sector to succeed. And that's very helpful for anybody who's going through what is still a challenging process. So that's sort of more a kind of emotional benefit in a way, but there are lots and lots of practical benefits. You get discounts for all sorts of services and events. You can get free ebook copies of the guidebooks that we offer. There is an affiliate marketing scheme whereby if you have your membership logo on your membership badge on your website or on your email footer or wherever, and somebody clicks through there and becomes a member through your affiliate code, then you earn what seems to me to be a very generous affiliate fee, a minor benefit compared to the advantages of the companionship, sharing best practice, meeting lots of new friends, bonding with people who are writing in the same genre as you are. Sometimes you can feel very isolated, and we've just had a really interesting contribution to the blog this week by somebody who is writing magical realism, and suddenly there's a whole cluster of people saying, oh yes, I write that too, oh, and do you know about this person, and it's lovely. But it's just really embracing, you know, you do feel part of a huge community. But it also is because we have lots of professional high-achieving advisors like yourself who are contributing to the level of knowledge and the standards of practice within the group, we're trailblazing best practice and showing people really how it should be done. And so you feel, as part of the group, you feel like you are at the cutting edge, and there is just so much you can learn from the more experienced members. Even if you join it as somebody who is still writing the book, and you can do that, you can join it as an associate member. You can just absorb knowledge almost by osmosis. You know, just so much knowledge on there. just hang around and you'll absorb it.
There's a number of free ebooks once you're inside the members thing. The thing now we're saying is we can ask Ally any question you like about being an indie author, and there will be something that will answer your question or someone. So, and we have a monthly Q&A, me and Orna do that. Google Hangouts. We just had one last night on the VAT master.
Yes, huge issue. Nobody wants to fight that one alone.
Yeah, exactly. So we're trying to educate as well as have the community side of things. So I agree with you, it's brilliant. So tell us what is happening with the book in terms of breaking it into smaller pieces.
Yes, well, we're going to divide, because at the moment it's available free of charge to members. Non-members can buy it for a very reasonable charge through the usual sources, but we're going to split it down into individual chapters and then build up each chapter into a sort of a mini ebook, like a Kindle single type book, which will also have specific added sort of bonus features. So with the little book on how to get into booksellers, into bookstores, there will be things like how a template for producing a book information sheet, and sort of bits and pieces. There'll be more material that we've assembled since the book was written, the latest blog posts, links to the latest blog posts that will expand on the information that's in there. So there'll be, because the book has a number of different chapters about very specific niches, people will be able to pick and choose which piece they want according to what their current goal is. So if somebody is having a campaign, if they feel that they've got bookstores and libraries sorted, but they really want to home in on getting places speaking at literary festivals, and they can just buy the bit with the literary festival information and with lots more. So it's sort of like an expanded version of each chapter will then be a mini book. And that will also have obvious advantages in making it more discoverable for anybody outside of the organisation who hasn't got involved with Ally or hasn't heard of Ally yet. Then they will still be able to find it through search engine.
I think it's like a brain trust, you guys. And what's so great, I mean, it is, and what I find so brilliant is I totally admit to not being particularly even interested in print books, with bookstores and libraries and stuff. That's not what my interest is. Oh. But then there's people like yourself and Piers and Karen and, Orna, and people who are doing this and are experts in different areas. So it's kind of brilliant that there are people who are doing all kinds of different things. So whatever you're interested in, there will be other people who want to do that too, and people who are writing all kinds of books. I mean, some really diverse genres. And I also just wanted to make sure people understand, you and I are British, but this is an international organization. So I don't know if how many countries we have members in.
I don't know off the top of my head how many countries there are, but the Orna and the other team members who sort of drive Ally, we have a meeting every fortnight, and I'm always very pleased to feel that I'm part of a global organisation, then, because those meetings really bring it alive, because we have people joining the conversation from Berlin, Johannesburg, Los Angeles. We're everywhere. Through the miracle that is Skype, we can do these things. We have membership, growing membership in Australia, India, all over Europe, well, everywhere, really.
Yeah.
We ought to actually have a little map. That would be fun.
I love the old-fashioned vampire type map.
Yes.
And I think that's also exciting because it demonstrates that this is a global movement. I mean, the indie movement really is one, and for music and film and other creative arts as well as books. It's not,
yes,
you know, it really is a global thing and a cross industry thing. You know, I think even the startup culture, the fact that millennials would much rather start their own business than, you know, work in a big corporate, I think this movement will continue. And both of us, you know, hopefully be in the forefront with Ally and in fact anyone listening, you know, as well. And since we are talking about Ally, I will point people at thecreativepen.com/alliance, which is my link. So tell us, where can people, well, first of all, just tell us briefly, if people are interested in your flash fiction or short stories and your writing, where can people find you and your books online and your blog?
Everything centrally on my author website about me and all that I do, with links going off in all directions, which is authordebbieyoung.com. And I've recently, funnily enough, just last month, started up a book blog as well, which is separate, which is debbieyoungsbookblog.com. I have very obvious titles. I like A Simple Life. Then people can also find me on the Ally website, because I write probably one or two blog posts a month on there, but I'm on there every day looking at comments, responding to comments and posting up the new posts. We have a new information post, guest post every single day. I'm on Twitter at Debbie Young BN, and the BN is for by name, because my blog is called Young by Name, and that's a subset of my author website.
Well, look, Debbie, it's been fantastic to speak with you, and you are a fountain of knowledge about many of these things. So I urge people to check out your website and that book and the Alliance of Independent Authors. So thanks for your time.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to be part of your podcast. Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.